You're listening to Nonviolence Radio, and we're going to turn now to some nonviolence in the news.
Greetings, everyone. It's time for some nonviolence news. As we like to say, news events that you won't get in the mainstream media and analysis that you will get hardly anywhere. We're going to try something a little bit different today, and that is that Stephanie and I are going to share items back and forth in a non-competitive spirit.
Well, competition to make each other a little bit better.
That's
so
it.
What have you got, Michael?
Competition to excel.
That's right.
So we also are going to try to highlight where these events and other items fit into the three circles of the roadmap.
Ooh, you're upping the challenge right now.
Okay. Yep. Hope you can catch up.
Let's go.
The three circles of the roadmap representing three stages of any successful movement are personal development, constructive program, and direct action, or satyagraha.
Okay.
But we're also going to stick with our categories of resources, news, and events. And so I'd like to mention one resource to start us off, very appropriately named Positive News. It's both a magazine and a website, www.positive.news, offering, no surprise, positive news in many categories. Most of these categories are not directly related to nonviolence, but all of them, especially cumulatively, especially if they form a habit of news listening, are changing the mindset, which is very important in adjusting our culture. Just to cite one item that they have right now, because one of Stephanie's items will be appropriate here, it's about a gangsta gardener, a Los Angeles-based leader, Ron Finley, who believes masculinity is about building thriving communities and being a conscious citizen of the planet.
So that must be an example of person power. Is that right?
Quite right.
Okay. All right, so I have a resource. Claiborne Carson, director of the MLK Junior Center at Stanford University, one of the world's foremost scholars on Dr. King and trustee of Dr. King's papers, spoke at Ebenezer Baptist Church, a noted place where King used to preach, on the life of Martin Luther King in front of C-SPAN cameras. The talk covers Martin Luther King Jr.'s early life, why he decided to become a reverend, and how that contributed to his work in the civil rights movement. It's just an hour long, and you can find it at C-SPAN. I'd say that is constructive program, telling a different kind of story about history.
Yeah, interesting, Stephanie. I think a lot of these resources are constructive program for the people who do it, but are individually person power. So the next one I want to mention is the exciting first offering of its kind coming from Nonviolent Peace Force, an organization that we strongly support. And this is an online course called Strengthening Civilian Capacity to Protect Civilians. And if anybody knows how to do that, it's Nonviolent Peace Force. They're offering this course through Merrimack College, and it begins on 9/18, September 18th, but registration will be closing, appropriately, on 9/11.
So what is that in your circles, Michael?
As I say, I think it's constructive program on the part of Nonviolent Peace Force and person power on the part of the students.
Okay, all right, you got one. So I want to say that nonviolence extends to all of life. It's not just about human beings, and it's about our relationship to the whole of life, to nature, everybody. So you can learn how to help animals and humane workers affected by Hurricane Harvey in Houston by visiting dodo.com/relief, and I would call that constructive program. Michael.
I would also, and the next one is definitely person power, and it's from ICNC, the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict. They have a website, which we've often cited, called Minds of the Movement, and they have a great article up just now on mindful activism. It's called The Power of Mindfulness in the Streets, and I'm happy to say that the picture on the masthead focuses on Sarah Thompson, whom we interviewed just a while back. The background here is that decades after Thich Nhat Hanh, the famous Vietnamese Buddhist monk, founded the concept of engaged Buddhism. Now, Thich Nhat Hanh, or Tay, as they call him, who is now 91 years old, and he's going to visit his hometown in Hue. He was asked one time, what is engaged Buddhism? And he answered, why, it's Buddhism. You can't be a Buddhist and not be engaged in the sufferings of others. Now, that's interesting in particular with regard to the new intro, the entry, of Buddhists in South Korea. Most of the scientific studies of of mindfulness have focused in almost entirely on the benefits to individual well-being. The applications of mindfulness to activism have been limited to preventing stress and burnout, which heaven knows is important. But there's also direct impacts on the social fabric, which you will find in this article and also in the new development called Mindful Schools, which is spreading. And that is, scientists now use the term subtle energy, and Gandhi and King firmly believed in it. You just heard Mahatma Gandhi talking about a living power that pervades the universe. When we practice mindfulness or meditation, we are not only absorbing that power in ourselves, but putting it out into the world.
Nonviolent scholar, resistance studies scholar Stellan Vinthagen, a friend of the Meta Center as well, has an important book, The Theory of Nonviolent Action, and that book will soon be available in German. I call that Constructive Program, again telling a new story about who we are and actually making the resources for it. And there's an important conversation activists need to have about ableism and our language. For example, do we say that we, quote, stand for justice or rise against fascism? And can we see that these metaphors that imply standing or make it seem that standing or rising is then a good thing and it makes you a good person to stand or rise? So we need to have a conversation about that. So one resource that I think that could be very useful that I found is by Everyday Feminism, a blog on feminism. It's a 2014 piece. It's called 10 Questions Why Ableist Language Matters Answered. So check that one out.
Very good. I'm not exactly sure how to classify this next one, Stephanie. Monitoring indigenous peoples' rights around the world may have just gotten a bit easier because there's a new tool now called Indigenous Navigator. It's an interactive watchdog that allows you to keep track of the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and outcomes of, for example, the World Conference on Indigenous People and key elements of the Sustainable Development Goals, which I heard a lot about 2 years ago at the UN. So, for example, the Navigator was tested in Nepal. Women learned that they had the right to participate in decision-making, which they had not known. Empowered with this knowledge, they approached local officials and got to exercise their rights. In certain municipalities in Nepal, there are actually funds now that are meant for women, but they didn't know about them. So claiming those funds enables them to go forward. I guess I'm going to say this one is constructive program.
Thank you, Michael. Over to me. Listeners ought to know about the awesome resource, the Swarthmore College Peace Collection, and we've had the curator of that collection on Nonviolence Radio in the past. So they teamed up with someone called Quote Investigator. This is a site that investigates the origins of quotes, and they looked into a popular quote attributed to Mahatma Gandhi, which is, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win, to see if Gandhi really said it. And their conclusion, the quote did not originate with Gandhi, but with a large family of sayings from the early 19th century. And you can see the full article at quoteinvestigator.com/2017/08/13/stages and connect with the Swarthmore College Peace Collection at swarthmore.edu/library/peace. I would call that constructive program.
Not bad. I think I would call the next one direct action because I'm moving over to the news segment now, and this may be our first example of direct action today.
Oh, wait, before you get to the news, let me share a couple more resources that I have then so we can stick together here, Michael.
Okay, so Stephanie, do your resources and then on to the news.
Very good. The Institute for Humane Education has created a support page at generosity.com. So look for the Institute for Humane Education to bring support for their program for creating much-needed resources for, quote, solutionaries in education. What is a solutionary? Might be you. According to IHE, the Institute for Humane Education, a solutionary is a person who identifies problems and their underlying systems and then develops solutions that are humane, just, and sustainable for all people, animals, and the environment. I call this both person power and constructive program at a nice intersection between the two. Zen Hospice is offering classes in mindful caregiving. I think this is an important aspect of nonviolence because death can be a period of gentle transition or of pain and conflict, right? So we can have nonviolent dying periods, right? And so we can support those around us transitioning out of this life with the tools and skills of our deep inner practice of nonviolence. And we need to have much more of a look at the end of life in our society, don't we? So you can find more information at zenhospice.org/education-training/MCE or just go to zenhospice.org. And over to you now, Michael, for some of the nonviolence news.
You bet, Stephanie. And this first, I'd like to mention two domestic actions that have taken place recently. In Durham, North Carolina, residents turned out en masse to counter white supremacists, which isn't unusual in itself. But this time they had monitors with orange vests. So I want to call that proto-peace teams. And peace teams are a very important innovation that's not only enabling rallies and marches to stay nonviolent, but showing that there are nonviolent ways to actually counter severe violence. And just on a local note, in Petaluma, I may have mentioned that there's a poultry plant and three animal rights activists were arrested there this week. And it's a development that I welcome not only because of what you just said, Stephanie, about animals, but because often in the animal rights movement, the style has not been one of nonviolence. But it looks as though people are moving over to that way of being, which means that their methodology and their ideology are going to resonate. They're going to be consistent, and that'll be more powerful direct action.
For those of you just tuning in, this is Nonviolence Radio, and you're getting all the news that you're not going to hear in the mainstream media. So in other nonviolent news, a pilot of a Turkish Airlines flight from Heathrow to Afghanistan refused to take off because he learned that there was a man who applied for asylum in England for fear that he would be killed in Afghanistan being forcefully deported. So the pilot wouldn't take off. The flight was delayed for 45 minutes, and it only took off after Samim Bigzad, a 22-year-old man, was removed from the flight. And this is an action of non-cooperation. It was supported by a number of activists pleading the case for Bigzad to remain in the country.
Here's an organization that I did not know about. It was founded back in July of 2014, and they've gotten active recently. It's called the Pan-African Conference on Nonviolence. It was started in Cape Town, South Africa. They have delegates from 34 African countries and over 50 countries from every continent that helped give birth to this. And basically what you'll find is a tremendously big, very extensive blog site. So this, again, is a great example of constructive program.
And in other constructive program nonviolence news, on August 31st, 2017, the city of Los Angeles officially replaced October 9th, which was Columbus Day, with Indigenous Peoples Day. Similar resolutions have been passed in Denver and Seattle, and this is an expansion of the work to reconsider the celebration of our violent history in the United States and work towards some semblance of cultural reparations.
Three related items as we move around the world. In front of Berlin's Brandenburg Gate recently, and coming up in addition on September 1st, which is actually today. This is happening as we speak, if you're listening live, 4 to 6 p.m. in Germany, so it's probably over by now. And it's a coalition of many peace and environmental groups, and I am very happy to hear that because often these two issues are not carried out in a coordinated manner. And these are two powerful communities who are much more powerful together than they are separately. And so they're going to commemorate, or have just commemorated, the beginning of World War II, 78 years ago today. In a related development, on the occasion of the 72nd anniversary of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the 2017 World Conference Against A&H Bombs called on the peoples of the world to launch international simultaneous actions to create what they're calling a peace wave. Interesting concept. And they note, among the 193 member states of the United Nations, only 9 countries are in possession of nuclear weapons. And if they were to be persuaded, it would be possible to achieve a nuclear weapon-free world within the lifetime of the Hibakusha, the people who suffered in those bombings. One more related, if I may, Stephanie. This is my favorite item for today. 6,000 very clever, well-trained protesters managed to gum up a coal production company in Germany, just to the west of Cologne, or Köln, as it's called in German. So this is one of the most polluting sites on the planet in a country which has invested massively in wind energy and alternative energy. And these 6,000 people were very well organized. They divided up into 10 fingers, as they called it, and carried out all kinds of clever actions, including making a human pyramid to block the police from detaining some of their friends. And they said, we need to work towards a just transition, and we need to do it now. These people are putting their bodies on the line for that. They carried out strategic civil disobedience, so we're definitely talking about circle number 3, direct action here. And the name of this campaign, Ende Gelände, which literally means land's end, but is a German idiom meaning, I guess I would translate it, the party's over, which is the title of Robert Heinberg's book on the end of fossil fuels.
In other news, upholding the goodness of the world community, and in spite of the U.S. president's threats to build a wall to separate the two countries, Mexico is reaching out with supplies and aid to help victims of the Houston flooding. And we call this an example of integrative power, where you're not using threats, you're not using economic exchange. What you're doing is you're reinforcing the goodness of your own being as a human being and saying that when I do this, it's going to draw us closer. So thank you very much to Mexico. In New Orleans, democratic socialists are putting their ideals into action by offering free brake light repair on August 26th, which already passed, and September 16th. They point out that police often pull over people of color and immigrants for broken brake lights, and that can lead to police violence as well as deportation. So this is an important piece of constructive program. Finally, the New York Times reported a major breakthrough for the Zapatista movement. They've renounced their identity as a violence-identified group because they feel that there's already too much violence around them in Mexico. So they want to take on nonviolence and otherwise legal structures. And this is really important news, but the problem is the way that the Times reports on it. The journalists suggest that this means that they are no longer, quote, revolutionary. But what is more revolutionary than renouncing violence? So I'm going to say this is a matter of, well, the Zapatista movement, this is very much a constrictive program in a lot of ways. But so I'm going to vote for person power on this one.
Not bad. I want to add a personal note. Some 20 years ago, I was part of a meeting, and Subcomandante Marcos sent a representative to us. We were starting the plans for what became Nonviolent Peace Force right down here in Santa Cruz. And his message is something I will never forget. At that point, they were carrying out armed struggle in the jungles of Lacandon. And the message that he sent to us was, show us another way, and we will take it. It just goes to show you that often people engaged in violence do not want to be, but they don't know of an alternative. Hence, the importance of the work of the Meta Center and other organizations that promote nonviolence education.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael. Any more news on your end? Because I have some more on mine.
One brief item. The UN Office of Disarmament Affairs has now put online something that they call a signing kit, which is to help you enroll your government to sign and ratify the new treaty to ban the bomb. You can try that in this country. I don't think it's going to, quote, work, unquote, but it will be helpful. And they ask that you let them know what's working in your country in this historical effort.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very long website, but you might be able to reach it through abolition2000.org.
Thank you, Michael Nigler. So this is kind of like news because Nathan Schneider is a co-founder of Waging Nonviolence, or else I'm just trying to insert this into the news because I really wanted to talk about it. Nathan Schneider, he wrote a fascinating article for American Magazine, which you can find at americanmagazine.org, which is called A Case Against Constant Provocation. His case is that we're addicted to provocation, one titillating issue after another, and it's keeping us from being united. But doesn't not getting provoked mean you don't care? No. Here's a highlight. A rushed reaction to a provocation, whether by a tweet or by mass mobilization, will not reverse the human condition. So we may as well expect to be in this struggle for life. If we are in it for life, we need time to rest, to breathe, and to worship. And my favorite is, a people who are hard to provoke are a people harder to rule. So I'd say that is part of some information that could help us build up any of those wedges of the circles and the roadmap. But here's something else. Can board games make us nicer people? According to one journalist, Annalise Griffin, board games can be a solution to part of the political division taking place in our country and our world today because, as she says, a good board game builds in enough chance so that any reasonably skilled player can win. Even in chess, famously associated with warfare and military strategy, the emphasis is not on who ultimately wins, but on the ingenuity the players display in the process. And in all of these ways, board games release players, however temporarily, from the maxim that life is divided into clear, consistent categories of winners and losers, and that there is a moral logic as to who falls into which category. And she goes on to say, another significant feature of board games is that they require several people to sit down in the same room together and concentrate on a shared experience in real time. And that's becoming increasingly rare in a world in which we often see our friends and loved ones more on social media than in real life. And part of our roadmap says to personalize our relationships. So this is an opportunity to get some friends together and experience and experiment on that one. Michael.
Stephanie, I would say that if you're making yourself unprovocable, which is something that was highly recommended, mm-hmm. that's definitely person power, definitely personal mm-hmm. empowerment.
What about some events taking place, Michael? We have a few more minutes.
Okay. Here's the biggest event in the area. Good. If you go to Petaluma these days, starting today, and look in the main storefront window of Copperfields, you will see a display by the Meta Center with some of our books and some wonderful posters that Stephanie has gotten created.
It's a fascinating display. And International Day of Peace is on its way. That's September 21st. And just around that time, we're having an event, Justice for the Petaluma Community, Community Conversation, September 18th at Aquas Cafe. This is a community conversation about restorative justice and getting restorative justice into our schools. You can find out more at MetaCenter, that's metawith2ts.org/events. And finally, we have a nonviolence news hope tank every Wednesday morning from 8:15 a.m. for an hour. And we explore the latest and greatest nonviolence in the news, a collaboration with Waging Nonviolence. And again, visit metacenter.org/events for more information and to sign up for the calls. Michael Nigler, last pieces of information that you'd like to share.
Right. Also on that same occasion, right after the International Day of Peace, the No War organization of David Swanson is putting on something called No War 2016. That doesn't look right. Real Security Without Terrorism. It's a huge event that is going to include Medea Benjamin and Tim DeChristopher of environmental fame, and just a long, long list of wonderful people. And it will be at the American University Katzen Art Center in Massachusetts. Music by the Earthlings duo, Sharon Abreu and Michael Hurwitz, who have also played for the Meta Center at Aquas Cafe to great acclaim. Stephanie, that kind of wraps it up now today. Not that that's all the news that's going on. It's all that we had time to report on.
Very good. Thank you so much, Michael Nigler. And this nonviolence news, you can find it up at themetacenter.org after the show if you'd like to read it and share that out. And so it's been a great show, everybody. We really appreciate Edwin Rutsch allowing us to use that conversation from his empathy circle. And we want to thank KWMR, our mother station, to you, all of our listeners, to the staff and volunteers at the Meta Center for Nonviolence, and to everybody out there. Let's take care of one another. Thanks.